producers.
Well, let's see here. I think we'll cover some of the other things you've done and are doing as we move along, but I wanted to switch gears a little bit and start talking about, I guess, the landscape of radio. You know, now that you've made it pretty clear, you've been in the business for, I believe you said, 37 years.
Yeah, I hate to admit that, but yeah.
So maybe a good starting point would just be, what are some of, if not the biggest thing, but some of the biggest things that stand out as, you know, major changes in the radio imaging business from when you started to now?
I think the availability of anybody that is interested in it and is excited about it to get involved in it to some extent.
The farm system?
That didn't used to be as easy as it was. I mean, when I got my first four-track tape machine when I was in college, and I saw a picture the other day of my college bedroom, and I was so proud of that thing. It was the focal point. It was like mm-hmm. the altar. And I worked. I mean, I saved and saved and saved and saved and bought a used four track to learn how to do four track or multi track production before I left college. Nowadays, a free download to your computer, you can have a program that will do amazing things, and mm-hmm. you can at least test the waters to find out if that's what you're interested in before mm-hmm. you're spending any more money.
And you can get great pieces of software. I mean, Reaper's an example of something that's like, what is it, $50 or $100 max?
Yep. Yeah.
I mean,
look at Adobe Audition is incredibly inexpensive. Pro Tools now is, I mean, if you really want to do it, you can have a great Pro Tools system on your computer. And the plugins are another thing. I mean, which has changed. One of the things I always wonder about is, it used to be very, very difficult to get backwards reverb effect, or to get echo, or to get delay, or to get filtering. You had to patch something in, do it, record it, mix it in. I mean, it was an effort. So when you were working on a promo, every effect, because it was, you had to work hard to get there. You thought about it. It had to make sense. It had to be worth the effort. And with the plugins now, one of the caveats I like to point out, and I have to remind myself this, is it's so easy to put an effect onto something and a different effect there and this, and it's just so easy to do it. At some point, you have to ask yourself, is that really part of the message? And I have to admit, my production style always has been kind of the effects create wild and crazy events to get your attention. And that's what I'm talking about more than when I'm working on something that is a recreation of a real environment kind of thing, a dialogue situation. I'm not talking about plugins for that. I'd like to get to that eventually. There's some awesome environment plugins that I've worked with that can create environments of where you want to be. If you want to be in a subway, if you want to be in a car, with a loading of a plugin, you can put any voice track there, which it used to be hard to do. If you wanted somebody to sound like they were turning away from a microphone, and shouting in the back of a room, you had to walk to the back of the room and shout. And in a lot of production studios that I worked in, there was a lot of natural reverb and it just didn't sound right. So it's easier to create a computerized environment now.
Well, you've got me. I already had my list of stuff to talk to you about was so long already, Rick. Now we're adding to it. Going on more about still, the landscape or generalities of what you've kind of learned over time. In fact, let me ask you this now. When you listen to radio today, I guess let's do two parts. What are you hearing that amazes you? What are you hearing that are there some things out there that are just amazing you with the type of radio branding? And then are there some things that you listen to and you go, wow, that's unacceptable. Like, we shouldn't have that on American radio.
One of the things I'll talk about, some things that I'm very proud of and some things that I'd like to see change. Right off the bat, I have to say that it hurts me a little bit that radio has in the consolidation and the revenue focus, we've lost the some of the great creative farm teams. It's hard to hang out with people. It used to be that, I mean, I could, there's lists of people that I think are awesome today that that would hang out in the production studio and ask questions with me, and would go to somebody who would hang with Dave Fox and ask questions. And I mean, they learned from people that were doing it and then grew and went beyond that. Robert Dudzik's an example of that. He used to come and hang with me and ask me questions. Now I'm asking him questions. You know, now he and I are trading ideas, and he's, you know, I'm calling him up going, hey, how does this work? And what, you know, and so it's amazing how, with Skype and with all of the technical ability to have social networking, that we don't physically do it as much as we used to, and I think there's a difference. So
you think that we're losing some potential in our work by not physically, like, yeah, I would love to be able to stand over your shoulder and watch you work. Don't get me wrong. But by virtue of us not doing that, we're not living up to our full potential.
Well, or just you're missing a chance to. I have to admit, 90% of what I learned over the years, I learned from adapting something that I saw someone else do, and went in my head. I went, that'd be interesting if I did that. And that was one thing I did. I mean, I emptied waste baskets at recording studios because I wanted to learn. I interned as many places as I could, and there's still people out there that are willing to go that extra mile and do that. And those are the people that are standing out and will stand out. They're asking the right questions. But it used to be the radio station environment.
Because there were more than three people working in a station.
Exactly. I mean, I remember back in Indianapolis, when we were going to do a promotion, the PD would call us into our office, and we'd do a thing called balloon therapy. We'd blow up a balloon, and everybody would sit in a chair, and you'd just keep the balloon in the air. You'd knock the balloon across the room to each other, and it distracted you enough where you actually didn't filter your thoughts. You'd say ideas for the promotion you'd probably be embarrassed to say if you were thinking about it, and some great ideas came out of that. And when you're only one person sitting down, you can it's very similar to what's happened in the music industry I absolutely don't want to sound like my grandpa going, I used to walk up, uphill to school 7 miles, and now that's not true at all. It's an evolving world thanks to technology, which is great. But, it used to be a band would sit down in the studio, the bass player would start playing something, the drummer would react to that. There would be a blending and a synergy of that creativity, and that the sum would be greater than the parts. And when you're one person sitting in a studio isolated in front of a Pro Tools system, some stuff gets away from you.
With seven stations of imaging to do.
Yeah, well, then you're not even getting to the point of, do they even have time to be creative? I was imaging one radio station, and now most people, if not two, they're imaging eight radio stations. Mm-hmm. So... I give the current creative guys so much credit for even having the energy and the love of the radio to be creative, because the technology only streamlines it so much, but that has helped.
Yeah, let me play a little bit of devil's advocate there, though. You were imaging one station back in a time when you were still basically doing everything analog. Shouldn't the fact that the people have put lots of time and money into this digital technology make it pretty just normal that someone should be imaging now 2, 3, 4, 5 stations? I mean, shouldn't we expect that? Isn't that fair?
Yes and no, but I've got to defend my brethren out there. One of the things that you also have to have time for that helped me tremendously is the time to organize. And so if you're swamped with 10, 12 hours worth of production every day, it's hard to organize that technology to tag every file so that you can find it again, to organize your files in a way that make it easy to go back and find things. You start, and if the outside suppliers don't do that for you, if your production library isn't organized well, or if your sound effects library isn't simple to find the right cut, one of the biggest problems you have is you start relying on the same sounds over and over again because it's the go-to sound. You don't have time to go, let me find something else that's a little different that might, and that can be a problem.
I screw myself with that all the time. So let me side note real quick, because I don't want to get off the main topic, but give us the Rick Allen super secret tip on how to organize our audio, because my God, I lose stuff all the time in my computer.
When you find out what it is, let me know.
Okay.
No, because I'm guilty of it. I spend an immense amount of time with metadata. I've got, let's see, after Climax has been going for 18 years, we've got over, well, with all
you know,
the different
I didn't
libraries.
Say it before, but congratulations on that, by the way.
Thanks.
That's another thing that not many people, you know, just like Eric Edwards being on Hot in New York City for 73 years, having a service run like that is pretty pretty amazing.
Well, and the secret there is, I think, I love playing around with sound so much that, I mean, I go back and you listen to some of the early stuff, and it has changed drastically with the change of radio and the change of sound. So that's and sometimes I have to admit, sometimes I wonder if I just need to change the name of the library, because a lot of people, I know this, go, oh yeah, I don't need to listen to the Climax demo because I heard that 8 years ago and I know what it sounds like. Well, if you heard it a year ago, you have not heard what it sounds like.
You
now.
Don't know what Climax is today if you haven't heard it in the last year. Yeah. You know, I'll be honest with you that I'm kind of that person. I had heard of Climax a long time ago. I knew it was you, and obviously, like many, many people, I know who you are. But it would, for whatever I was doing at the time, I it wasn't for me. But yeah, definitely check out the demo, because it's not the same library you knew if you checked it out, you know, a few years ago like me.
Thanks. And now you put the pressure on me. Now I'm going to have to go redo the demo, because the demo that's on the website is old, because who has time to do that?
Yeah. Well, man, but, this is just bringing up a question after question I want to ask. Go ahead with what you were going to say.
Well, I would just say what I've done over the years is, I mean, I've got close to, between all the libraries that I did for ABC over the years, about 35,000 cuts that are in my collection that I've produced, and all those now are in a computer database, and so I can search and pull them up and that. But it's still not. I'm still working on a day-to-day basis. I've got a huge project now where I want to go through and make sure all the tempos are in there, and then the moods, and so that it really, if you're wanting to search for a feeling, or if you're wanting to search for if you got a cash contest going, if you want sound effects for a travel contest, mm-hmm. that you can pull up a bunch of cuts very quickly, so you're not overwhelmed with, and then you can filter it down where you're not overwhelmed with, I don't have time to listen to 200 cuts to find the right travel cut. So I don't want to type in travel and have 500 cuts come up, which happens in some of the large libraries. But also you want enough to make a good choice. So it's a balance, it really is.
For what it's worth, I'll just add this. The one thing I have been doing is, and if you're lucky enough, I've been lucky for the last 5 years or so, almost 6 years, to be at the same station. You know, I have all my other clients as well, but, you know, and when you're in a genre like country, or even probably CHR, other ones, you're kind of doing the same stuff over and over each year. So, you know, you're always going to do a batch of summer imaging. You're always going to do a batch of July 4th stuff, maybe. You're always going to do a batch of, you know, cash contest stuff. So every time I come across something now where I'm like, damn it, I've done the same basic promo for the last 5 years, and all my files are still scattered about my hard drive. So I'll actually take the time, create, you know, summer effects folder, and I'll take the time this one time and pile everything I can find into that folder, because then next year I'm going to come to it and go, hey, look at that. Last year I was smart and I made a summer effects folder.
See, I love that, but my problem is I would have created the summer effects folder and then forgotten where the heck that summer effects folder was. Because, I mean, I've got about, I think I'm up to five terabytes of hard drive storage of just sounds. And so every once in a while, it's like, which drive is that on? And, searching through some stuff, sometimes too much, you know, sometimes a lot is too much. Too many choices can slow you down instead of speed you up.
Yeah, I'm still at the terabyte level, so I'm not up to Rick Allen audio hoarder status yet.
Give it time, you'll get there.
Yeah. Let's see here. We were talking about sort of the landscape of radio. One thing I'm curious about, I in no way want to offend you with this question, but I think for anybody in any job, it would be difficult to sort of stay hip, you know, stay up with all the, you know, my dad is literally a rocket scientist, yet I'm not confident he could set up his own Facebook account if he wanted to right now. And I'm just saying, you know, in our business, the technology comes so fast, we have to stay with it. What have you done to stay with it? Are there times that you think maybe you were a little behind on something? And, you know, how has that been for you?
If I ever get close to thinking that way, I usually kick myself in the butt and do something about it. But I've was lucky enough to be the youngest kid in my family. So I always was the baby. I was always considered the baby. And I started in radio young enough where in the beginning I was always the young kid around the radio station. And it was a scary, interesting time when a kid walked into the studio at Hot 97 one time and went, "Rick, you've been in this business forever. Let me ask you a question." And I'm like, oh, shit.
You were like, wait, I'm not the young guy anymore?
Yeah. And I'm embarrassed to say in my head I'm still 21 years old.
I don't think that's an embarrassment.
Well, no, at some parties that can be an embarrassing thing. For the last 10 years I've been heavily into Harleys, and so I've got a collection of Harleys. I go riding. I hit the bar scene with the bikers. My wife is a crazy young biker bartender, and she's a wild thing, and so that keeps me young. And I don't have any kids, so I haven't had to become a parent. I never had to grow up, and quite frankly, I haven't grown up.
And got a real job.
Well,
so.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, that's embarrassing, and it hurts to admit it on some levels, but it has made a major difference, I think, in the career. And the career keeps you young. You can't do radio. You can't want to do radio, or you can't want to play with sounds, because the key word there is play. You can't want to do that. If you get too serious about it, then you are the old curmudgeon that's down the hallway going, you know, these young kids. That's crazy. I had Nate Holzen was a studio manager here, and when I realized that he was he came from Arizona State University and started working for me, and when I realized that I'm talking to him for years on a one-to-one level, like we were, you know, the same age, that sort of thing, and I realized one day that he was born a year after I lost my virginity. So, I mean, he could have been my kid. And I'm talking to him like he is, older or, you know, wiser than me sometimes. And so I've never had the kind of brain that put that into perspective. And to the opposite way, I remember talking to ancient engineers at radio stations when I was a young kid and learning so much from them because they had a young outlook on life and they taught me so much. So, and technology, I mean, you know, I had to keep up with technology with computers and that sort of thing. So, you know, Facebook was, hey, my Facebook account, when I've got friends that are going, hey, that's a kid thing. And it's like, no, and then suddenly Facebook blew up to the point where they had me teach them how to get a Facebook account, you know, that kind of thing. So
over the years, there's been lots of different advancements, you know, whether it be the outboard gear just got better, or, you know, digital consoles, you know, and then there's the digital audio workstations, and then the plugins are, you know, they went from, you know, hundreds to thousands to tens of thousands of plugins. What was the hardest thing for you to kind of make the transition to?
No, I actually craved and looked forward to every transition. It wasn't hard, and it was, I loved it because I've been doing it from when it was first invented. I mean, I had Pro Tools when it was called Sound Tools. It was a two-track digital recorder from DigiDesign, and so I have had every version of Pro Tools from the very first one. So I've learned a little bit at a time the whole way. So the transition has not been tough.
So the steps that the technology has been released have been the correct ones, and since you stayed with it the whole way, there was never really, because I know for me, when I started, I never had to cut a piece of tape. I had, You know, I was just lucky. I had Saw to start with, and that was easy. Cool Edit, easy. But for me, transitioning to Pro Tools was very difficult.
Was it because you had so many choices with Pro Tools? I mean, it was not a basic digital workstation. It was a very advanced digital workstation. Was that what threw you off?
I felt that Pro Tools was very daunting. And it was almost just like by virtue of its design. Because, I mean, Cool Edit and Pro Tools, when you get down to it, are extremely similar. You know, they're both multi-track editors, and you can apply effects, you know, destructively or on the track. I mean, generally they have, you know what I mean?
Exactly. And one of the things when it comes to radio, I was amazed. It was about 5 years ago. I got invited to speak at on one of the panels at the Conclave, and I was supposed to talk about Pro Tools, and there was another guy there that was supposed to talk about Cool Edit Pro or Adobe, and he got up first, and he was talking about Audition and was giving some pointers, and I don't know what made me think to do this, but when I first got up, I go, hey, raise your hand. How many of you guys use Pro Tools? And in a huge auditorium, not one hand went up. Radio kind of cut its teeth with Cool Edit Pro and moved into Audition. And it's set up for really fast, good, creative radio production. And Pro Tools came from the music recording studio side and had to do so many more complicated possibilities that aren't necessarily going to increase the sound of a promo. So it is a much more complicated program. If I started today, I might go with Adobe Audition. But I started with Pro Tools.
My problem is now, I don't know about you, but I don't know if you have Audition. I tried using it the other day, and I'm just like, well, this is just a waste of my time. Because now I'm just so ingrained in Pro Tools, everything is it, you know what I mean?
I have it on my office PC because I thought it's so important to radio that I needed to learn it and understand it. And so I have a basic knowledge of it, but the other day went down to Ann DeWig's studio. She lives here in town, and was out hanging with her, and it's like, hey, teach me a little bit about this. So we, had a little Adobe class, they're different, very much different things. The fact that you're processing a file when you add effects to it, you're creating another file. Whereas Pro Tools, I started out with the TDM system, which is all the plugins are not destructive. They're in the mix, and so I never had to commit to an EQ. I could tweak it and do all the time. I mean, a point that is a good time to bring up now. One of the things I do is when I do sweepers, if I have the time, I will finish the sweepers, save the session, and I won't do the mix until the next day, so I can go back and listen to it with fresh ears and I tweak. I will sit there and change things all the time before I'm ready for the final mix.
Well, now that just might be a glaring example of why, you know, consolidation has hurt the quality of potential radio imaging on the air. Because let's face it, most people listening to this are like, I'm sorry, what? You're able to produce something today and go back to it tomorrow?
And when I was working day-to-day in radio, I didn't have that time. But I did, I mean, even then.
But that's such a huge thing. I mean, no, you're 100%. And I'm lucky where I do get that here at least the main mothership station I'm at. Where I can produce something today. In fact, I will produce something today. I don't need it until Friday. So I won't mix it. I'll come in tomorrow. And it's crazy how different things will sound with 24 hours rest.
And that's one of the beauties of moving from analog to digital is back when we were working with analog, you know, I would leave the faders up on the console when I went to lunch just to give myself a break. And I can't tell you how many times I'd come back and somebody popped into my studio to do something and moved all the faders down to do their work, and I'd come in and my whole mix would be completely, you know,
changed.
Yeah,
and just to, just in case some of our younger listeners don't understand what that means, the faders were very important because you're, like we said, sort of live to tape mixing your entire promo or sweeper, and the levels are all extremely important. They need to stay there, and that's not like Pro Tools where we're drawing them in with a pencil or we're, you know.
Which is another thing. I mean, two points you just brought up that I really am adamant about that I'd like to talk about. One is listening to a mix and looking at a mix are two different things. Yeah. And one of the things that I have to remind myself is close my eyes every once in a while. Listen to the final mix with your eyes closed, because when you're looking at the EQ curve on the screen, when you're looking at the waveform, I really think your brain starts anticipating, oh, that's where the first part of that word came in, and I could hear that fine because I'm looking at it. Whereas if you close your eyes, mm-hmm. does the voice cut through? Does the music interfere with anything? And we've gotten away from just listening to the music because everything is visual. We have everything up yep. on the screen. So try to make sure that you step back and kind of close your eyes or at least focus away from the screen. And the other thing is the difference between in the old analog days, everything seemed to flow because you were mixing everything. It wasn't hard edits. And the digital workstation brought in nonlinear thinking, because you could take this piece, slam it against this piece, slam it against that piece, and everything was then kind of snapped together. And just something that we might want to think about is, in a PPM world, you don't want to interfere, you don't want to interrupt. And sometimes, you know, too many jarring edits, if they're not part of the flow, can actually be perceived as an interruption. So I try to keep something underneath the whole mix that kind of flows and moves everything together to transition from one song to another. And when you're putting something into the next gen system, you want things to flow. You don't have time to tweak it most of the time. So if the production director can do that extra little bit of thought process, the station's going to sound a lot more listenable.
How much of your time, I mean, you said you had someone working in your studio. Is that true? Or is it just you in your studio?
Nowadays, in this wonderful economy that we have,
yeah.
Nowadays it's just me. But during the wild and crazy times, Nate and I were like a really bad troublemaking team.
Yeah.
There were two of us in the building at all times. We each had a studio, and that was really neat because I'd hear him working on a music bed and I'd pop into the studio and go, hey, how about adding, the snare drum in that section, that kind of thing. And it would yeah. end up being an incredibly better bed because we both kind of contributed. He'd come in and he'd listen to a sweeper going, hey, I'd been working on that sweeper maybe for 20 minutes. And he'd go, I have no idea what that person just said. and I'm looking at the script, so I know exactly what, and yeah. it was so helpful to have that, that kind of bouncing back and forth. Plus, one of the things that I was really proud of, and still am proud of, is using a lot of independent contractors, and I'm always interested in talking to really good creative people, because, and that's how I met Robert Dudzik. That's, mm-hmm. there's a long list of people that have done work for me over the years. It's great to have extra creativity coming in so that all the sounds don't sound like they're coming from one brain.
And Joe DeAugustine?
Joe was another great contributor. Brian Apple. Kelly used to do some sweepers for me when she got busy,
I bet.
Yeah, back in the day when she was in Minneapolis. It's neat to watch these guys. All of their careers have taken off. I'm so thankful that they got to work with me when they did, and it sounds kind of hokey, but I'm really proud of them.
It's so sick how many people you've been around. I mean, a lot of these, you've just rattled off the names like four or five people I've interviewed on this podcast. You were in close contact with the one and only Eric Edwards and Brian James within a short amount of time.
Yep. I mean, those guys, Eric's still one of my best friends. Brian, I was the best man at his wedding. Kelly and I have partied at a few R&R conventions. Ann DeWiggs is, one of the nicest people I've met. I'm sure I'm going to forget some people that are really, really good friends of mine. They're gonna, you know, like, hey, what about me? It's like,
yeah,
I'll put another list up on the webpage of people that I'm, you know, too stupid to remember right now.
It's not fair though that Anne has you in her town. So if she needs some technical thing, you know, I want to install a new processor, I'll just give Rick a call.
That was one of the fun things we did a month or so ago. She just switched over to an incredible microphone and got.
What's she using now?
I'm going to go blank on that one, but it's a.
Is it a shotgun or is it a?
No, it's a guy who. She was using the Lawson and then tried out the bottle, and a couple of other mics and settled on this mic. So you're going to have to do another interview with her to find out exactly.
Yeah.
She also put in a massive passive, the Manly massive passive, and the Yuri. Well, now it's United Artists or United Audio 1176, and we spent an entire evening just tweaking those settings and really just kind of dialing it in. And to her credit, she continues. She's really gotten comfortable challenging the technical side and wanting her voice tracks to do the right thing for the right customer. She has different settings for the TV folks, for the movie folks, for the commercial folks, for the radio folks to do what it needs to do.
In case anyone's curious, real quick, the intro and outro of this podcast is actually Anne. She hooked me up with some voice work, so she's awesome, and you'll hear her there. But anyway,
and one of the nicest people to work with. I mean, just and that's another thing. If anybody's doing freelance work, you can really as a producer, I can't tell you how nice it is to work with voice people that are open to suggestions, that want it to go easy, that will go the extra mile without being taken advantage of, obviously. But
yeah.
Dan Tuchek is one that is just awesome to work with, and these are guys that are incredibly professional, and yet don't take themselves so seriously. Know that they're doing it for the client, and if you're going to go into freelance, you got to remember that, because a lot of these, there are some people out there that are just a pain to work with, and that's why the difference is. That's why Eric has been been on the radio station for all these years, and other people switch station voices every 3 months. The producers.